Hello and welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. My name is Alejandro Rojas and I am with Martin UFO Willis. Hello, Martin.
Hey. Hello. How are
you? Good. I called you a Mr. UFO when we started talking a little bit ago, huh?
Yeah, I'll take either title.
It's a good title.
Yeah, I can't remember what it says on my license. I think that's on my passport.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. UFO? That's
a bad
thing
like
to
that,
have
yeah.
on your passport. You don't want them to know. Yeah. You want to stay incognito, dude.
I know. I get stuck at all the time at different ports. And,
yeah. Because when I travel doing UFO investigations, I go I wear a fake beard or mustache, and I come up with these different personalities, you know, just because you have to do kind of a cloak and dagger thing to keep the mystery going.
Well, I just kind of, I put on a Stanton Friedman mask.
Good idea.
Works. Yeah, that works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I have a great guest today. His name is Rob Mercer, and he works with Ohio MUFON. He has his own site called the Miami Valley UFO Society. And this isn't Miami in Florida. It's in Ohio. However, I'm kind of like curious, you know, I found out about this guy. He's got these blue book files no one has ever seen before. Really cool stuff that he found, and we'll talk about what's in there and how he found them. But I hear that you interviewed him. How the heck did you find out about Rob before I did?
Oh.
Because even though I called you Mr. UFO, I was being nice. I'm Mr. UFO.
I know. well... Actually, I'm not going to reveal my sources. No, I will say.
You're kidding. Ooh.
I was contacted by someone in the Midwest that knew him.
Uh-huh.
That's also a researcher. And he said, hey, you should ask this guy in the show. He's a great guy. It'll be a great interview. And, you know, I don't want to spoil your interview, but, you know, he's going to tell you how he found them, which is amazing. And I think it's once you hear that, you're going to – the listener out there may think, wow, that's a great idea, and more stuff may be found the same way he found it.
Yeah, I know others who have found stuff over the years that is really cool, interesting information. So, yeah, it's a great story. We'll be talking about it soon. I found out about it from Shepard Johnson, who is a guy online. He's written for Open Minds occasionally, for the magazine and for the web. And he also is just online once in a while. He's part of the Roswell Slides research group that we talked about, of course, with Roswell Slides. And here it goes, Roswell Slides rearing its ugly head again. In fact, I have a bit of an update. Might as well talk about it for the audience. I haven't bothered to write about it because I'm so done with the slides. I think it's case closed with tons of nails on the coffin. And, of course, more nails are coming. But there is a gentleman who has found – ooh, and I could give more information than practically anybody out there. So there is another picture of this mummified body that has been found. It's a photo that was taken in the 50s by a guy named Frank Hadle. Of course, when it was posted online by an associate of Jaime's, Jaime immediately said that it was a fake. He thought it was a painting or a Photoshop. And this is what frustrates me. I can understand someone calling something a fake or a hoax if they've investigated, but I'm really getting kind of at the end of the line here with Jaime. Immediately he calls things a hoax or a fake without doing any investigation or research. And what's frustrating about this is the Roswell Slides group, They are very careful researchers, and they verify and demonstrate everything they've discovered. So they did what Jaime should have done, and they did more research, and they discovered that, this slide comes from a photo that was posted in 2008 by this couple that's been posting a lot of their old photographs, including their wedding that happened way back in the 50s or something. A very attractive couple when they got married. But Frank Hadle was his name, and so one of the Roswell Research Group guys, Isaac Coy, we've talked about him many times before on this show, he actually got a hold of Frank Hadle, and Frank sent him a picture of the actual slide that came from. And so there's a little bit more about this, but this is another picture, and again, it says it's a mummified body and that it comes from S.L. Palmer, that it was retrieved at Montezuma's castle. Everything that that the researchers have found thus far about the thing is just all being reinforced by all of this. But yeah, more news there. I haven't written a story because it's just so done. But at this point, I kind of feel like a best case scenario, best case scenario, if there's anything anomalous about this body, it's that it might have, some anatomical or physiological abnormalities. Best case, most likely it isn't that abnormal. But it's got nothing to do with UFOs, Roswell, aliens, blah, blah, blah.
Right. No, I'm right there with you. I saw the picture, and right away there's some distinguishing marks. But for him to say that, I believe he said it was a painted over photo.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. I don't know how you could paint over a photo so accurately as that. But
Yeah.
if you look online, you can see the document that Jaime made out and signed for a $10,000 reward for anyone that proves it's a mummy. And I don't think he wants to give up that money.
Yeah,
I think.
$10,000 for some kind of proof, and then $5,000 for a photo. So this photo should fit that criteria to get the $5,000. So, but of course, it's just so disingenuous and kind of hoaxy yourself. You don't put up a reward if you're not have no intentions of fulfilling it, or at least doing some due diligence to investigate. But right off the bat, he calls it a hoax.
Yeah, I would really like to step into the future and see, and look back and see how this whole thing plays out. But I said all along, right from the very beginning, that Jaime's not going to back down, and
Yeah.
I'm still feeling the same way.
You're probably right. Very
Yeah,
frustrating. That's how
it
our
is.
UK friends. You probably haven't. I like to. We have a lot of UK listeners, of course. You and I, and I'm sure on your show, podcast UFO, you interview researchers from the UK like Nick Pope, and I love the way they say frustrating, and so often I say frustrating. Like they
I
say
like the
it.
way they spell too. An
Yeah.
organization with an S instead of a Z. I love
Yeah,
that
they're
stuff.
weird,
Yeah.
man.
Yeah.
So let's get into the news, even though I already got into some news. That wasn't UFO news. That was, anthropological news. But let's get into the UFO news. Martin, why don't you start things up? What do you want to talk about?
Well, this is a case where I think that there was an attempt to abduct Nessie.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I think
Nessie's
so.
ours, man. Those
There,
aliens need to lay off Nessie.
I know. Well, back on April 29th, a gentleman named Alan Betts was vacationing in the Scottish Highlands with his wife, and they took a picture. And in this picture, you'll find online, you'll see this picture. It's a great image of, it looks like a double UFO. I don't, it's possibly it's some type of lens issue, but I don't think so because it's at such a distance. And when it's blown up, it's very accurate as far as the distinction of these two vessels side by side of some type of craft or something. And the guy that took the picture is actually rather skeptical about any of this stuff, but anyway, I think it's a great picture. I hope you take a look at it. And I wanted to know, have you looked at it? And what do you think about that?
I have looked at it. I saw the story last week. I would think it was a UK paper that had written about it. And I guess it's like a company kind of like the AP Caters News that sent this out to different news sources. And I thought the picture is really interesting. And then Lee Spiegel wrote about it. I was talking with him about the wrote about it on the Huffington Post. I knew he would do more interviews, so I wanted to see what he wrote. And this guy's skeptical. I don't know. You know, it looks like there is rain off in the distance, so I thought maybe it's a couple of raindrops that are reflecting. But what's strange about that is it's two objects or reflections, and they look exactly the same. So that would be weird if it was a raindrop. So, yeah, I'm really scratching my head. This is really hard to figure this one out. But, this isn't one that Open Minds has written about.
Sorry. Well, you can see another thing. You can see like highlights and shadowing, and there's the thing about it is they're exact doubles. Like maybe it's a double mint alien twins or something. Remember the double mint twins?
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, could be. But
weird.
But anyway, they have these little necks, like almost like Nessie necks sticking out of them.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. They kind of have this appendage that seems to come out of it, almost Nessie-like.
As a matter of fact, if they were down in the water, they could look like two Nessies.
Yeah, you're right.
Maybe that's what Nessie is. Maybe Nessie's taking off right there.
Maybe Nessie is a UFO.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, that's interesting. So this is weird. But you're right. It is an interesting picture. We did have it in our headlines last week, so people know. And hopefully I'll have a story up about this before this radio show goes online. If not, I'll have one up by tomorrow. So just check back on openminds.tv. But you're right. I agree with you, Martin. I cannot come up with an explanation for this one.
So I just gave you undue pressure for writing a story.
Yeah.
So,
You know, I keep busy letting the public know what's going on in this field. You know, the other thing, too, is I haven't seen anybody coming up with a great idea other than a possible reflection. One person said maybe some sort of debris on the lens, which I suppose is possible. I haven't seen anything like this in particular before, but I guess that's possible. But really interesting stuff.
It is. No, I don't think that's a good answer anyway.
Yeah. Loch Ness is so beautiful too, man. I would really love to visit that place one day.
It does seem to rain quite a bit, but yeah, it's beautiful.
And I guess it has a castle near the water, and that's what my next story is relating to. Roger Marsh, who is a director of communications for MUFON, of course, writes for Open Minds. And this is a non-MUFON story he wrote for us that's really interesting. And I was near this place because this place is near Cozumel, Mexico. However, we just didn't have the time to get there. And this is the castle ruins at Tulum in Mexico. Really cool ruins that are right on the edge of the beach there. However, there's been a couple UFO sightings there, and most recently, someone posted a video. Again, it's possible that what this person posted is some sort of lens reflection of the sun, but the video is really weird, and I haven't seen a reflection like it. You see kind of this white object in the middle. It kind of splits into two, and everything happens in a split second. So it's a really interesting video. Then Roger posted a second video to show that, you know, this area has they've had UFO sightings there before, and he posted one from July 2013 of something strange in the air. So a couple really interesting videos. I'm not sure if you got a chance to look at those.
I have to say that I did not. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I've been just absolutely swamped. So, sorry about that.
So,
you're not going to give me my
pink
slip, are
you? No. No, that's the cool thing about this. You know, we don't always have looked at the – we don't always know what we're going to talk about.
That's right. I have absolutely no idea today.
Yeah, so it's fun that way. But another story that Roger wrote, which is a MUFON story, is this is a neat one. You probably haven't heard of this one either, which is fine. I'm going to tell you about it and you can get really excited and tell me how excited you are about it in just a minute or not. But this is kind of neat. And I don't know, are you into ghost hunting at all?
Well, let's just put it this way. I had an unexplainable experience. I'm not going to call it ghosts, but
Wow.
it really has fascinated me to wonder what the heck it was.
How long ago did this take place, and are you willing to share that experience?
I'd say about 12 years ago. You really want me to share that on
Yeah, that would be
UFO show?
really cool.
You really do?
Yeah, I
Okay.
do.
Oh wow. Well, I've never done this in a public venue, but I've been in the antiques and fine arts business forever, and it was a slow winter one year, and I was taking items, antiques, out of a house for an auction, and I told the lawyer, I said, "Hey, if you need someone to clean it out, it's a slow time for me. I'll get my crew over here and we'll clean it out, throw everything away that is not non-saleable." So he said, "Yeah, that's fine." So I went upstairs into a room, and I had to pull the door open across the carpet. It was really the carpet had been put in, and they didn't trim the bottom of the door, so I had to yank the door just to get it open. So, and all the windows were closed in the room and everything. So I put like the stuff out of the closet into a garbage bag, and I carried the garbage bag out into the hallway to set it down. And when I did, the closet door slammed shut. I mean, it slammed hard. And I went back in. I'm looking at the windows, they're closed. And then I pulled on the door and I realized that it couldn't have happened. What happened just couldn't have happened. And then there was a broom on the stairs, and it went down the stairs and the front door slammed. I went down the stairs and the broom was leaning up against the door. And things like this were happening in the house. It was the thing that was really weird. It wasn't an old house. It was like 1940s or something. You think of all these old houses I've been in. And then the last thing is I went to pick up something, a basket in the garage. It was the last item. And a guy that was working for me started teasing me when I was telling him what was happening and, making ghost noises and all that. So he left, and there was only one item to throw into the garbage trailer that was there, and it was a basket in the middle of the floor, and I went to pick it up and it was stuck on the floor, so I pulled it really hard and it broke in half of it staying on the floor, half of it in my hand. And then I walked over and I tapped the bottom half of it with my toes, my shoe, and it moved. It wasn't even stuck to anything. I mean, I don't understand what was happening, but I got the hell out of there.
That is really weird. That's some weird stuff. And I was excited to ask you about this because I know you're in the antique business and you've done this sort of thing. So how strange. It's really weird. The reason I asked, thank you so much for sharing that story. I think that's really interesting. I'm very fascinated by ghost stuff, and I have done ghost hunts before. Unfortunately, I've never seen anything, and I put myself like, I'll go somewhere in the dark that's supposed to be, where all this craziness happens, and I get kind of fearless because at some point when you start looking for something and you don't see something, then you're kind of like, you want to put yourself in those situations. So I haven't had any of my own experiences, but this is kind of a neat story that was posted by Roger March. It's a MUFON UFO story. And what happened is it was almost 1 a.m. on May 25th when this man and his daughter felt that they were being watched. They felt something strange, so they started to look around, and so they went to this cemetery nearby because they thought, well, maybe there's a ghost out there. We'll go do some ghost hunting because it feels like a weird presence. When they're out there, they see a shooting star, then they see another one, and then they notice these bright lights, these two large bright lights that began moving closer and closer to them at a very slow pace. When it got close enough, they said it looked like a giant black square that was darked out in the sky with these lights on them. It made no sound whatsoever. It was, you know, not too far behind of the over their heads, they felt, but it was difficult for them to tell. But yeah, this really weird craft that flew straight overhead, stayed for a minute, and then it just kind of like it slowed down and then it sped up, but not like other stories where they speed off at a great speed. It just sped up to at a slow pace, just kind of hovered away until they lost sight of it.
Wow.
Weird,
So
huh?
this is a basic square. Now I've heard of
Yeah.
actually one of my friends that's actually on the Antiques Roadshow saw a UFO that had lights on it that was perfectly square, like a box.
Really?
Yep. You never really hear about that. So this is like the second or third time I've ever heard of anything like that.
Yeah, a perfect square is really rare. Rectangles aren't as rare, but you're right. Square shape is just kind of odd. So that's interesting. And this guy's on the road show.
He's on the Antiques Roadshow. He won't give, you know, he said I could never use his name, but it was quite an amazing sighting because the thing burst into five lights and was chased by a jet. He saw the whole thing with a bunch of college
Really?
buddies.
Wow. What's his name?
And so I asked him, I'm not going to tell you his name. He asked me, I mean, I asked him, I said, did that change your life? He said, I could care less. And I'm not making that up. I mean,
Wow.
you have to know the guy, you'd understand. But yeah. But it's strange, and you know, they can't be very aerodynamic, those square things, you
Yeah.
know? Yeah.
Really weird. Yeah, I know, I watch Antiques Roadshow, so if you told me who it was, I'd probably know. But yeah, that's so interesting. Thanks. And no, it's good. You know, you shouldn't give away anonymous witnesses'
Yeah.
information. It's a journalistic integrity thing, a researcher integrity thing. But you do. I know you're aware of this story. This is kind of neat because last week we talked about this cool interactive UFO map that this guy came up with, a data
Right.
scientist with where you could click on the map and it'll show you all these sightings, and how he was particularly interested in mass UFO sightings. Really cool map. Well, what's interesting is now there's another group of data specialists who came up with another UFO map. It's kind of like these data and survey companies love to use UFOs to kind of demonstrate what they do. Now, this map is not interactive, but it has some really interesting information. They show sightings per capita, so like where sightings are happening the most, and it demonstrates, you know, just like our maps that we've made here at Open Minds and others, that the Southwest, you know, has a lot of UFO sightings. Excuse me. But they also look at other things like the time of year that UFO sightings happen and the shapes, and they track shapes over a long period of time. So they show, and I thought this was kind of neat, that lights or fireballs or flashes, they kind of lumped into one group, has increased over the years. So have circular, at least lately, circular sightings. Triangle sightings have kind of been consistent. However, disc UFO sightings, what we typically think of as a UFO, has tapered off and has decreased quite a bit over the years, which is really interesting. And as far as when these things happen, they notice that around 9, 10 p.m. is the time of day that most sightings happen, and July. In the midsummer is the time of year that most UFO sightings happen. So, really interesting data that's shared on this map. People ought to check these out because they're really cool looking too. It was a company called IDV Solutions that put up this story, and on their what's called a UX blog, where they kind of highlight their data savviness. So it's really cool. People should check this out. And you know, Huffington Post. Love Lee Spiegel and my friends over at Huffington Post, but I gotta, you know, I gotta criticize when these news places, because I hate it when they don't do their due diligence around UFO stories, because they often feel they don't. Huffington Post UK posted these maps and totally got everything wrong. They didn't give credit to who created the maps. They said Newfork created the maps, the National UFO Reporting Center. But it was just that's the data they took. So that's unfortunate, but we've got all the links to the guys who should get the credit for these stories on our story. But yeah, here again, they use National UFO Reporting Center data instead of MUFON info. And I asked the guy who made the map last week, even though I thought I knew why that was the case. And it's sort of a case of having too much technology kind of hurting you here. Whereas, MUFON has this great database that houses all of the sightings, and you can do queries on this database, but it's limited because it is this big database with all of these sightings. Whereas New Fork is a one-man show, and Peter Davenport kind of posts what looks like a spreadsheet, kind of an Excel spreadsheet of all the sightings. So it's easy for a data person to go in, copy and paste New Fork's data, put it into an Excel, and then create all of these graphs and everything. Whereas you can't go and do a query of all the sightings from MUFON yet, so that you could do the same thing with their data. So, in fact, when I do my maps, I have to save the data from the monthly reports that come out in order to put together the maps that I'd usually do at the beginning of the year. But really cool maps. So that's why they're using New Fork data, if people were wondering, and not MUFON. But MUFON is working on their database to make it more friendly for the media who are trying to put together these sort of things. But really cool stuff. Did you see the latest map?
Yes, I've looked it over, and one of the objects is unknown, changing. I thought that was interesting, like a changing object, because you do hear that every now and then, how
True.
something changes. And yeah, it's kind of sad the beloved Lost in Space disc, the flying saucer we're all familiar with from way back, is really kind of fading out to newer models, perhaps. I'm not really sure, but you hear about triangles more often now, as far as just in general conversation. But the circle sphere made me wonder, how many people are confusing, say, the Chinese lanterns, that type of thing. But these spheres or the orbs or whatever you want to say are certainly on the rise, that's for sure.
I think I agree with you 100% that Chinese lanterns, satellites, this data goes back to 1905. So as the prevalence of Chinese lanterns and satellites and things like this has increased, I think that's probably one of the reasons those sort of sightings have increased. But a testament probably to the anomalous nature of the triangular craft. They've remained pretty consistent over the years. Even though we hear more about them now, they've as David Marler, who I think you've had on the show, your show as well, who wrote the book about UFO triangles, like he says, it's not a recent phenomenon. This is something that's been reported for many, many years. He says back even into the late 1800s.
That's right. I have to say this. I don't really say this much, but David Marler was one of my favorite guests. He is just so well balanced, and I really like his approach to things.
Yeah, that's funny you say that because I'm a big David Marler fan too. I think his book is great. It's such a breath of fresh air because he was so careful. He's so fact-based,
Right.
no bias, just research to put this together to kind of figure out what's going on here. And yeah, I agree. David Marler is great. He is the triangle UFO guy to me. He's the authority.
I agree. I agree.
All right, well, that's all the news I wanted to cover. Was there anything else you wanted to mention?
No, I'm pretty much newsed out there
Yep,
this
that's a
week.
lot of news.
It is.
Well, thanks so much for joining us again on the news, Martin. Of course, Martin's got podcast UFO you can check out on a weekly basis as well. So until then, we will talk to you next week, Martin.
You bet. And I want to thank you. I'm getting a lot of your listeners are coming over
Oh
and listening to
man,
my
you're
show.
stealing my listeners.
I am.
No,
Yeah.
that's great because it's fun because the more the merrier. That's what's cool about podcasters. It's people who listen to podcasts usually at work and they have hours to fill, so they've got capacity to listen to many podcasts. So if you're going to listen to another podcast other than ours, you got to listen to Martin's, is what I say.
That's right, and we are safe for work.
You're what?
We're
Oh,
safe for work.
safe for work. That's right. We don't
Safe for work.
get lewd or nasty at all.
Not yet.
We
No.
save that for off the air.
That's right.
So let's go off the air and talk some dirty talk.
All right.
All
Okay,
right.
sounds good.
But first, let me introduce our interview. Let's go ahead and talk with Rob Mercer. I am very happy to have with me Rob Mercer. Hello.
How you doing?
Doing pretty well. So, among other things you do, you're with MUFON out there?
Yep, I'm a state section director and field investigator.
Uh-huh.
I'm located over close to Dayton in that area.
Oh, okay. Exciting. That's what makes this, the location so important. So let's get into this. Actually, first, before we get into the Blue Book files and everything, I would like to talk about your background and what got you interested in this field.
Okay. Well, I had an uncle when I was younger. He had a sighting. Saw a light following him home from work one night and it told me about it. But anyway, he came out to the house and got me. And, you know, I was about 7 years old. And he just got me into it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as long as he was alive, me and him, that's all we talked about, you know, watched all the shows, always watching the sky, stargazing, you know, he had a telescope, always bringing it out to my house,
mm-hmm.
things like that.
So,
and I just kind of kept on going with it.
And eventually you became a MUFON field investigator.
I did about two and a half years ago.
Mm-hmm.
As my daughter started getting older and wanting to do her own thing, I just needed a hobby. More than just reading about it. So I was listening to, I believe it was Coast to Coast one night, and they had somebody on there saying that they could always use field investigators. So I looked into it and, you know, got the manual and took the test, and it's very informative, and I've been having fun with it ever since.
Now, have you had a sighting of your own?
The only sighting I have ever had was July 5th of last year, sitting in my backyard here, and seeing a bright light coming from the southwest direction, which is opposite of where you usually see the planes coming in, headed for Wright-Patterson, or we've got an Air National Guard base here in Springfield. It was just like a bright headlight, just a single bright light. And me and my wife and daughter were out in the yard. We have a drive-in screen. We sit out there and watch. So I was watching it as it entered my airspace over my yard. The light just shut off completely.
Mm-hmm.
And when it did, there was no other lights on. I was able to focus on it, and it was a triangle shape. I could only see the front end of it. It was very big, and it was silent and about 150 feet in the air, just floating over my house.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was a good distance from the back door. I've got one of those laser pointers used for stargazing, pointing out stars. And normally it's in my pocket when I'm outside, but this particular night it wasn't. And I wanted it. I ran in the house to get it just to shine on the bottom. And by the time I got out, I could not, my eyes would not focus enough to find it again.
Yeah.
But that's, as far as sightings, that's the only one I've had myself.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty interesting. That craft, I mean, what is your sense of what that was? Of course, when it comes to these triangular craft, there's a lot of debate, and some people think they're ours, some sort of secret black project. Some think they're otherworldly. What is your sense?
If I had to guess, they're probably ours.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many of them out there. And I've had guys and, you know, cases here in Ohio where people have seen them in the daylight and gotten good descriptions, you know, the back ends of them and everything. And when they draw them for me, they sure look like stuff you've seen in our military, just, you know, a little different, but the same formula.
Mm-hmm. And what about the cases you've investigated? Have you had some pretty interesting ones?
I've had a few. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are just, you know, lights in the sky, but I'd say probably a third of them are the triangles.
Really? A lot of them?
Yep. And I had an interesting one here a little northeast of my area last summer, up in Champaign County. A gentleman had seen a hexagon shape land in the middle. He lived out in the middle of nowhere, mm-hmm. in all farmland. He was letting his dog out and seen what looked like searchlights in the distance. Aimed upward, two of them aimed in different directions, and knowing where he lives and knowing what's in that direction, he couldn't possibly fathom what it would have been. And it was, you know, late at night, around midnight, he got in his car and decided to drive down there just to look at it. As he got there, they disappeared, but then he had seen red and white lights flashing on the road up in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
Most mainly white, a little bit of a red to it. and he assumed he was coming up on an accident. So he, you know, rolled his window down and slowed down. There was nowhere to turn around on this country road. And as he came up on it, it lifted up off the ground. It was just an intense light. I mean, there was a shape to it, but it was so intense he couldn't make out the shape perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
It was roughly 30 feet wide, he said. It lifted straight up. It was in an area surrounded by power lines and trees. It lifted straight up and went over some trees, and the road kind of took a dog leg, and he followed it to go down and turn around, and next thing you know, he was under the craft again, just the way the road was had wind around. And he still couldn't get a good look at it because of the lights, but he went under it for a couple minutes, and it turned to the left and shot out over a cornfield. It was about 10 days before he discovered MUFON, so it was late for me to get to the scene. But when we did get there, the grass in the area was pushed down a little bit. We had a lot of rain, though, so you couldn't say for sure. But
mm-hmm.
He was a very credible guy, very convinced of what he saw. Older gentleman, had no reason to make anything like that up.
Mm-hmm.
He was told by – he called Wright Patterson himself, and they told him he'd probably seen a remote control. And he – you know, he's had a garage full of remote control airplanes and helicopters. He knew that's not what it was.
Mm-hmm.
They told him it might have been a medical flight, which those things don't land in trees, and they're out in the middle of a field, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
But what intrigued me about it was he said it, if he had to give it a shape, it looked like a hexagon shape. In a MUFON's database, that's not even really a choice when you're looking for a shape of an object. Which, and then, you know, we always go to the National UFO Reporting Center and see if they had any correlating cases. And that particular day, about 20 miles away, they did have somebody see a hexagon-shaped craft.
Really?
The lights were different. I mean, different color. They were more of a blue light. It was early in the morning, probably about 15 hours before. But a guy had seen one, followed it for about 20 minutes down the highway. It was over him, he said.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, on there, you can't really do anything. They just report it. They don't investigate it. So, but it kind of matched up. I just thought that was odd, that shape. Two people had seen that shape in the same day. I found it interesting.
Yeah. What's really interesting, too, is at least, you know, I'm thinking back when I used to do MUFON field investigations, and to get your sense of this, you know, it reminds me of the very credible cases that I felt, you know, I investigated, but often they're anecdotal. And that's, I guess, what's frustrating about this field is so much of the best stuff is purely anecdotal.
It is. I mean, the witnesses, they don't always like what your classification comes up as what they've seen. But it can be tough, especially in this day of drones and everything, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to pick them out. But that leads to why I started my little website over here, group. I would go into the National UFO Reporting Center and look for, in MUFON, look for correlating. I live in Springfield, Ohio,
mm-hmm.
and I was never getting cases from my area. And we've got a population of about 70,000 here. You'd think you'd get some, and I'd always see them on the National UFO Reporting Center. So I just kind of started that Miami Valley UFO. It's Miami Valley's this general area of Ohio. Miami River Valley passes through here, just to give it a local name that maybe somebody might catch on to and start giving reports. Now, if you go to my site and report, it takes you to MUFON.
Mm-hmm.
I'm busy enough with MUFON. I don't want any other things like
yeah.
that to deal with. But it's just trying to get people to report them over here in my area.
Uh-huh.
And even still, in 2.5 years, I've only had three from this town, which
seems
odd. Because I've done a little bit of searching in the Blue Book files as far as Ohio sightings, and in the whole 21 years of Blue Book in Ohio, there was I think 1,104, I'm estimating here, sightings reported, and roughly 700 of them were from the Dayton area.
Huh.
Out of all, so I mean, it used to get a lot of them, but
yeah.
Back in the 60s, mainly in the 60s.
Yeah, interesting. Well, and it's a very big deal, especially relating to Project Blue Book, that you're in the near Dayton, Ohio. And, maybe you could tell us why for people who aren't aware.
Yeah. Blue Book was operated out of Wright Pad here for 1947 to 69, late 69. And I'm a plumber by trade. And for years I worked over in Dayton for about 15 years, going in people's houses, working. And I would always see, you know, people have collections. It's surprised how many people were into the subject. Hmm. You know, and I'd talk to them here and there. That got me to just, I've always looked on Craigslist for UFO stuff. Every few days I'd type it in if I'm thinking about it. Never find anything. Even then, I was just expecting to find, you know, grandpa's UFO books that somebody was going to throw out, things like that. But on one particular day, it was September in 2013, I was up late watching the news, and I decided it had been a few days, I ought to check it. An ad popped up that said that a gentleman was selling Blue Book files that belonged to a captain at Project Blue Book. He had found out under a box of pile of lumber in a box at a garage sale. So I was pretty excited. It was one of them spit out your drink moments when I saw that. So I, first thing you think that's too good to be true. So you're kind of looking for news stories of people getting taken by things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see anything. I sent him a message. It was pretty late at night. Ask him if he still had them. And I had a hard time going to sleep because something like that gets you a little bit excited.
I would have the exact same reaction. I would be, I understand. I'd be very excited.
Yeah, I was. So I got up, worked the next day, and he finally texted me about noon the next day and said he still had them. Nobody had showed any interest in them. He had just had them on there for a day. So I talked him into holding them for me until I got off of work that afternoon and drove down there. He lived on the south end of Dayton, mm-hmm. more or less. And the ad is what he said is he told me the story. It matched the ad where he got it. So I went ahead and purchased it from him. It was just a single box. It had case listings of all the cases from 47 to 69. Nothing redacted in them.
Mm-hmm.
There was miscellaneous files and folders. A clip from Lean, Illinois in 1967, I believe it was, the Officer Fisher case. A bunch of slides. And just a bunch of like press releases, documents, interoffice memos, that kind of thing. So as soon as I got in my car, I made sure I screenshot on my phone that ad, mainly to cover myself in case they had been gotten illegally.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. I drove on home, excited as heck, and instantly got into looking into them. And he, like I said, he had bought, it was an auction, he had bought a pile of lumber, and that was in the pile of lumber.
How weird.
I know. So I got in there and got to looking at the names inside of it. And then one name in particular came up, and it was a lieutenant that worked there. He was on a lot of the documents. They were late 60s. Mm-hmm. Most of them. I mean, there's stuff all the way back to the 40s, but most of them were late 60s. So I started with his name, trying to find out where he lived. And back in the – up until 2000 – he still lived in Fairborn area, Dayton, Fairborn. That's where Wright Pat's at. And he had moved here and there, but he had sold a house – early in the 2000s. It had changed names and they had moved. Well, I got to looking at that particular house that he had sold, and there was an auction there a few months before that point. So, it was kind of fitting together. I was hoping I was on the right track. So I drove down there. It's about a 20-minute drive for me down there, and found that house, and it was actually a two-story garage. Well, the garage, an attic upstairs, that's a good place for things to get lost over time. So I was pretty convinced I had the right guy, was on the right path. So then it came, before I really wanted to, I called some of my friends from MUFON, and they came over, a couple local guys here, and we spent about 8 hours on that Saturday looking through them, trying to figure out what they were. We could tell that the lieutenant, he was a lieutenant with the Air Force, he gave briefings on the subject for the Air Force.
Hmm.
Yeah, there were slides in there, things he'd pass out for people to look at.
Interesting.
Statistics on the slides. There's a cartoon collection from the whole program. I mean, there were some all the way back into the early 50s.
Wow.
Cartoons, comics, where they just collect them. They doodle on some of them. But we didn't find much. There was nothing in there that wasn't unclassified.
Mm-hmm.
And we just come to the conclusion, he must have worked for him and just gave briefings. That was his job.
Right.
So I sat on him for about 6 months trying to get up the nerve to approach him to ask him about him. I didn't want to get him in trouble for sharing them, but I also didn't want him to take them from me.
Yeah.
So I another buddy of mine here in MUFON, his name's Pete Hardinger. He was a former Air National Guard. We got to talking, and he said, you know, I got a military background. Maybe I could call him and break the ice. So he went ahead and placed a call to him. We found his, you know, where he had currently moved. I actually did a drive-by on it a few times, trying hoping I'd catch him out mowing grass or something to figure out a way to approach him. I didn't want to scare him off. Well, he, like I said, he called his house, and his wife said they had divorced a few years before. That's why they'd moved and split up and everything. But she felt free to give us his phone number. He lived out of state. Pete went ahead and gave him a call, and then called me a few minutes later and said that the lieutenant wants you to give him a call, talk to you about that stuff. Of course, I was, you know, a bit afraid to call him. I didn't know what was going to happen as far as losing it.
Yeah.
So I called and explained to him, you know, where I got him, and he was surprised that he'd left him behind. When he moved out, he didn't have a problem with me having him.
Good.
He just said, I moved out. Basically, when the program shut down, I'll go ahead and say his name because he said he didn't care if I say his name. It's Lieutenant Carmen Morano.
Mm-hmm.
He was there from 67 to 69. He was the officer there with Quintanilla. When they was cleaning out, when Blue Book shut down, you know, they classified all the cases, sent them to, or unclassified them all, sent them down to Maxwell Air Force Base. And a lot of this stuff that I have was a lot of the case files were what the press came in and seen. They had books set up for them to look at cases. They'd all the time wanting to look at check out cases.
Mm-hmm.
There was also all their textbooks and all their tools for investigating cases.
Hmm.
They had, you know, books, page papers, correspondences from sign companies, blimp companies, textbooks, lots of different books about UFOs. They even had novels. Novel from Frank Strange's was in there, actually. UFO magazines. Basically, it was things that were in the desk that were for the trash. And he took them home. He thought, yeah, I'll just take those home and keep them. They might be worth something someday. Well, after talking to me for a couple hours, we talked several hours at night on the phone about UFOs. He said, you know, you sound pretty interested in that. He said, I've got 3 or 4 more boxes up where I stay in the summer. If you want them, I can send them to you.
Wow.
I was like, are you serious? He's like, yeah. I said, well, I'll pay you for them. He said, no. He said, they're just going to get thrown out one of these days. So he gave me his phone number up there and told me to call him in a month. So I gave him 2 months. I didn't want to pester him too much.
Mm-hmm.
And called him, and he said, well, let me go through them and get the trash out, and I'll send them to you. I said, well, you know, leave the trash in there. That's the good stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll even take a pencil. I don't care, anything like that. So he went ahead and boxed it up. Came in 3 huge boxes. I mean, he spent probably $60 sending them to me.
Wow.
$60 or $70. And they were just full of loose file papers.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Socorro case was in there. There were some cases that were actually organized in folders, but there were a lot of loose documents. Basically, mm-hmm. like if you were cleaning out your desk.
Yeah.
Or desks, when something shut down, you know, just throwing it in the box to make its way to the dumpster. And, I mean, that's kind of how it was. It looked like the deck had been cut several times. It took me a good 6 months just sorting through it to get it some sort of organization.
Mm-hmm.
But as I got it, I mean, it was good. There was the Socorro file itself was 200 pages long.
Wow.
There were, I think, 12 pictures from the scene. I'm pretty sure they were taken Saturday, the day after the crash. I've had another guy tell me he thinks it was Sunday, but they're very clear first generation pictures. You can see the burnt bushes. I mean, you can see a lot of them on the National Archives website, but there's a lot of neat things in them. There were more films in there. A copy of the Tremonton, Utah film from 52 was in there. More slides. There were some sound tapes from different cases over the years and different radio programs with with Tacker on there and Kehoe. There was an interview from 1968 with the Morgantown, West Virginia Police Department about a sighting, which the lieutenant told me it was actually his favorite sighting when he was there.
Really?
It was a, It was a Zond 4 satellite entering the atmosphere. So, and then there was, a lot of little things like that in there I can give you a little more detail on.
Pretty amazing. I mean, what's great about this and why it's so exciting for me especially is I've spent a lot of time going through the Blue Book files, writing stories on them. And what's always frustrating and difficult, and I don't, not just difficult for me, but also for all media, is the images are typically photocopies of pictures, and they're terrible. I mean, the quality is awful. And so there's all this supplementary material referenced but not included in those files. And that's what's exciting, because on your website, MiamiValleyUFOSociety.com, you've got a lot of pictures here of, some of the stuff in there, and you've got the actual pictures where you can make out these things, see what they look like, just some really fascinating things. One of the incredible things that really blows me away that you have, looks like two of, and I would just love to see one of these, is this famous Introductory to Space Physics manual from the Air Force. Maybe you can kind of explain that.
Yeah, I've got two of those, volume one and two. I asked the lieutenant, because he was a physicist. I asked him, I said, were these involved with the UFO program, or would these have been something from your training before that? And he said that he couldn't remember. His subject, he couldn't remember. There is in these books, there is a chapter about UFOs in one of these. I thumbing through it right now. I can't remember exactly which one. But yeah, those are nice textbooks, though. And I'm also a NASA. I collect NASA items too. I have my whole life, and I mean, they're just when you see them, they're pretty interesting. But there is volume one and volume two. There are those.
And
Go ahead.
I was going to say, and what that book says about UFOs is pretty weird, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
What's it say?
I don't have the page saved here. Just give me. There's a chapter in the back, though, that does give it a mention. Now, I had a friend of mine was asking about the same book, and there's another volume that gives a little bit more of a mention than what this one does. I'm trying to remember which one of these that is. And going through this stuff for the last year, between that and I haven't had a lot of time to actually enjoy reading everything. I've kind of organizing and scanning has taken up a lot of my time. Let me locate that page here, though. Now, could I tell you a little bit about the lieutenant while we're sitting here?
Oh, definitely, for sure. That'd be great.
Give me a minute to find a page. He was when he went into the Air Force and was assigned to Project Blue Book, he went in a fan of science fiction. He grew up his whole life a fan of science fiction. And, he told me that he was going to prove they were real when he was there. But when he had left after 2 years, he was basically – he tells me anyway, he was convinced that they don't waste their time coming here. He knows they're out there. I mean, and for that reason, and if you look at a lot of the Blue Book photos, I mean, there is a lot of hoaxes people sent them. And with the short staff that they had, and you was investigated at one time, you know how much work goes into it and the amount of cases they had. You can see where a person will get burnt out on the subject.
Yeah.
Well, Go ahead.
I talked to Bob Friend, who was in charge of Blue Book for a period of time. Really nice, older gentleman. And, he wanted to express the big thing he wanted to express is that we genuinely looked into the cases, and we did it better than he says he thinks anybody is doing it these days. Or they took them all very seriously. They were very careful. But still, he's adamant that they never found any that they found to be, that mysterious. He feels they were able to explain away pretty much all of the cases. So, and he seems like a very honest, genuine person. And I've heard the same sentiments from many of these Blue Book guys.
Well, that's the same thing I'm getting from Morano. And I have no reason to not believe him. I mean, he sounds genuine. I've even asked him, I've always heard that all the good cases in Blue, you guys were kind of a front, and the good cases went over you to another organization. And he said when he was there, he never thought that. But he also said, knowing what he knows about the government now, anything's possible. But the same line, though. And you can see, I mean, I have to stick up for them just by looking at the paperwork I have. They did put, at least the workers, put a lot of effort into it, trying to solve what they were.
Yeah. And we do have at least one memo out there. I think it's called the Bollinger Memo that does say that there were cases that – the cases that were more significant to national security were not included in Blue Book. So who knows? There could be, you know, of course, a lot of people are certain, but it's certainly possible there were – the best cases went somewhere else.
Yeah, and that's – like I said, he never seen any that he – I mean, he'd give me some insights on a few cases that he could remember. But when he left there in 69, he never even thought about UFOs after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've tried to get him to get back into the subject a little bit. Like, he likes hearing about some of my MUFON cases, the newer stuff. I mean, interesting. I don't give him details, but we just, you know, just talk about them a little bit. And he's actually – even though he never went out on the scene when he was in Blue Book, he was stuck at the office all the time. Even if he wanted to, they wouldn't let him go out, he told me. He would take and he would tell me about investigation, what I should look for when I go out, different things like that. So it's kind of been interesting from a historic aspect, just, you know, I'm a history buff too, and just talking to somebody like that that was in the field so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting. Now, I found the page on that in this book. It was actually chapter 24 here. And it's just one page about unidentified flying objects, and it references several books. It says, you want me to read it to you?
Sure.
Okay. It says, throughout this book, the authors have tried to present a basic picture of environment of space. In doing so, they present data and elementary physics behind some important phenomena. However, since theories which describe most space phenomena are open to rapid change, the authors have avoided emphasizing a particular model unless this model has substantial experimental data supporting it. For this reason, the chapter will not attempt to explain unidentified flying objects. Then it just goes on to tell about the stir that was caused after World War II. But it might not take the time to mention it, but I've had somebody tell me that there's another volume out there that's similar that has it in it.
Yeah, there is a volume that is out there. I haven't seen an actual copy of it, but that supposedly that, well, that, you know, I've got the text, and you can find the text online where it goes into more speculation about what they might be and everything.
Yeah, somebody's seen that on my site and got a hold of me as soon as they seen that, told me to find that page and look at it.
Yeah, exciting. Well, one of the other things that you see on here that's really interesting is the Socorro stuff. I really love, and it seems like you love it too because you have it up in your header there, this photo you got of like a mock-up.
Yeah, there was 9 of those in there,
mm-hmm.
and 2 negatives for it. They were just paper clipped together. And the back of only one of them, the back said mock-up of Socorro.
Mm-hmm.
I asked the lieutenant, of course, it was before his time when Socorro was there. But when he got there, he put all the files together. He organized them. They were a mess for the press when they came in. Hey, actually, I guess he told me a lot of them were a mess, and it was part of his job to organize them. So I thought, well, maybe he'll have a little insight to why that, what that picture is, who made it. Was it Air Force made? Was it somebody, you know, down in Socorro, somebody making their backyard up here? He had no idea. He said that David Moody put that file together for the press and everything in it. So he could not give me any input to that one. So that's why I like to put it out there just for people. Maybe somebody will say, my grandma made that. Or I showed it to Ray Stanford. He was adamant, you know, that he didn't care for it too much because it was really wasn't accurate as far as Lonnie running, where he was running, the terrain, the color of everything. But, I mean, it's just a mock-up, except that, like that. It's still interesting, though, with the – I just wish I knew who made it.
I love it. I can see, knowing the case, you know, what Stanford is talking about, how, you know, the details aren't necessarily correct. But it's a representation, and it's so well done and so fun. And so for listeners, you know, you could see this at Miami Valley UFO Society. I'll probably – maybe put it on the scroll on Blog Talk, but it's like a model car and a little kind of like army man representing Lonnie Zamora, the police officer. And I guess for maybe you can explain kind of with the Socorro case for those who aren't familiar.
And in 1964, late April 1964, in Socorro, New Mexico, which is a little bit south of Albuquerque. I've been out there myself. I think it's about a half hour south of Albuquerque. Lonnie was on patrol and gave chase to a couple, what he thought, teenagers in a car, speeding, and he went after them. And off to in the distance, he saw a bright light that looked like an explosion. So he pulled away from his chase and went up to investigate, and came up on the scene, and he saw a craft sitting on from what I understand, a relatively flat area. But he saw a craft sitting in the distance, and he saw two beams around it, and he had made his was working his way to it when it taken off, and he kind of dove out of the way when he heard the explosion. Didn't run like that. The craft lifted off, took off to the, I believe it was the west. And disappeared, and right afterwards, police officers on the scene. One guy was taking pictures, which nobody has ever been able to find, one of the police officers. And that's kind of what that case is right there.
And so you have pictures like this mock-up, which, like you said, this is like a hilly terrain, whereas the case really took place on flat terrain. But it's still a really fun mock-up. And then you do have some images of the ground because Lonnie Zamora had said there were marks from where the
Yeah,
craft had landed and some burnt ground and bushes around.
and I found these images can be found online and in the National Archives. They're not as good a quality as the ones I have, but they have. If you look at them, you can see the burn marks on the bushes. I'm not sure what all I have on there, but I do have some that show the burn marks. And I put a video together that's on there. I made a video to accompany this stuff to show. I take these around the libraries and show people from time to time. And I wanted to make a video for people that didn't know anything about Blue Book to kind of show them what it was all about. And if you go to the, well, I'm still, let me rephrase that. I'm editing that one. I found some information that I want to put in my video. I haven't got it finished changed yet. But I've got, like I say, 12 pictures from the scene that. From that day, they are very clear. And I actually showed them to James Fox last weekend. He was at a symposium we had here in Ohio, and he was very interested in them for his 701 movie. Because I would imagine they're clearer than what he's seen, what he has. I know he's got a segment on that case in the movie, I would say. It's one of the big ones. And he was real interested in that Socorro
Well,
paperwork.
yeah, great case. I know J. Allen Hynek, who was the astronomer, who was a consultant to the Air Force, said that was one of the cases that convinced him that there's something to this phenomena. He loved it. And there's rumor out there that Quintanilla also liked it. However, you have a video you posted where he talks about the case, and he kind of
Yeah,
said,
that. Oh, now the lieutenant told me, he's like, I've got a video I'm going to stick in here too, that it was in a desk drawer when he was cleaning it out. And nobody'd ever watched it. He said it was of Quintanilla. He had no idea what was on it. And that's it that you're talking about in the bottom corner there. It's about 50 seconds long. The quality, I didn't want to send it away to be transferred. So I had to kind of have it done locally here by a guy that probably could have been better quality, and I could still have that done at some point, but I wanted to keep my eye on it. So that's what I, the quality's not the greatest, but it's nothing you've not heard Quintanilla say about the case, but I believe that video is unseen.
It's a great video. I think the quality's fine for the period of
Yes.
time.
I bought a projector to project it on my wall myself to try to transfer it here, and that projector really got a hold of it. Yeah, it was kind of scared me a little bit. So he got a few jumps around there. That's why I eventually had to give in and take it somewhere. But everywhere I took it, wanted to mail it to Chicago and here and there. I just was afraid to let it get away. But there was more in that case as far as I took that case. I've tried to take all these cases, but it'll take me 20 years to do that. It's because there's so much information out there, but I'm going on fold 3 and comparing what I have with what's in there to see if there's anything different in files. Nothing in any paperwork I have is redacted at all, by the way. So, I mean, you can see people's names and addresses in most cases. But, for instance, the Socorro case, going page for page on Fold 3, I would find pages that I had that they didn't have. And vice versa, I'd find pages that sketches here and there and pages that they had that I didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
No rhyme or reason to why. But I was I'd reached out to Ben Moss from MUFON, Virginia, because he was doing a story about Socorro, looking for some things, and I wanted to tell him, you know, about what I had here. I'd read in the MUFON Journal, and he put me in touch with Ray Stanford, which I knew of Ray. I didn't know much about him, though.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, was on this internet checking him out, and I'd see his drawing interpretation of the insignia that Lonnie seen on the side of that craft. Over the years, there's been debate that he used a decoy insignia so as to stop people from saying they seen it that didn't mm-hmm. see it. And Ray, as looking at his book, he had an inverted V with three lines through it that he said was always the original symbol. Well, if you look in the Blue Book's files, you can't find it.
Yeah.
Socorro, it's not in there. Well, I'm looking at that symbol, and I'm thinking, well, I have seen that symbol somewhere before. So I'm going back through my file, and sure enough, I've got like 12 pages of notes. Notes that we've determined had to have been taken from Wright-Patterson, maybe mm-hmm. over the phone, talking to somebody down there. And, you know, we've not been able to determine whose handwriting it is, even though I kind of think it's Quentin Ella's, but I can't say for certain yet, because the only handwriting of his that you can really find is his signature, and that's not enough to go on.
Mm-hmm.
But I have about 12 pages of notes, and the insignia that Ray talked about all these years is in there twice. They've drawn it and wrote about it a little bit, basically saying what Ray says. But it is in there. So he was real excited to hear about that.
All right, cool.
He's even, I think, he put out a little newsletter showing people. So.
I've seen that, where he talked about how they had decided to change, put out not the correct one for that reason. Yeah, I read his thing he put out on that.
He's caught a lot of grief over the years about it. Mm-hmm. That's you know, it started.
Well, people like to argue every point.
Oh yeah, but that's only thing I can say is they talk about it in these files. They've drawn it. The Air Force drew it. They mention it. You know, so
interesting.
Doesn't say it was it, but
yeah,
it's in there.
One thing to note about these pictures, which is the other reason Dayton, Ohio was where Blue Book was, is the pictures are titled Foreign Technology Division, Air Force. SC, which is, I'm not sure what command, maybe you, Services Command probably, yep. or something.
Yep. And yeah, they had changed their name over the years. It used to be Air Material Command.
Mm-hmm.
Then they went to that Foreign Technology Division. But I've got documents from both eras, but mostly from the late, obviously, when the mm-hmm. lieutenant was there. But there's a lot of, in these, like Quentin Ella had to do I call it an essay about UFOs. Another lieutenant that followed David Moody before Murano, his name's David Marley. He also did an essay. It's like there's a lot of paperwork like that in here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, then they've got a file titled for University of Colorado. I believe it's everything they sent out there for the Condon report.
Mm.
Just a history of UFOs. They have, and a lot of things on that video I've made have come from those pages I've read out of there. That's where I got my script for it. So it's kind of geared towards people that don't know anything about Blue Book, but there is a lot of things in there like that. A lot of photos, a lot of good color photos from different cases over mm-hmm. the years. Another good one, which I just been sharing with Shepard Johnson, who you talked to about me.
Oh, yeah. I should note that Shepard was the one, who told me about this stuff. And so, fascinating.
Me and him's been trading a little bit of stuff back and forth, and I sent him one. It's the Homer, New York case of April 11th, 1964, where a physical therapist and his family were eating up and saw an object come down, break into different pieces, hover around. And the gentleman's wife, they didn't have a camera, but she has sketched. Hynek was real interested in the case. She sketched drawings of it. And you could find those out there in, you know, black and white on the internet, but there were seven color glass slides in this mix from that. So that's also another one of the Project Blue Book unknowns.
It also has here, for a five-year period, I guess, 63 to 68, what they paid Hynek.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few of his contracts in there. Uh-huh. I've got some more that I've not even had a chance to scan in yet, but his bills for making phone calls, for going different places, visiting different people. Yeah, he would send them in like that. There was a copy of one of his exams from University of Northwestern that he gave out for astronomy. Just different. Lots of correspondences between him and other people that I haven't been able to figure out what case they go to yet. So I've just kind of got them put together in a binder. I've taken all these files, probably 90% of them, and put them in binders with, you know, acid-free sleeves. Mm-hmm. So when I take them places, people can put their hands on them and look at them, look through them. Just to get, I feel like the people of Ohio, I owe them a chance to see it all before I put a, do anything with it. Get a chance to see the history from around here.
Yeah,
there were other books in this collection, though, that I couldn't touch on the video, but like I've got a Xerox copy of the incident at Exeter, and on top of it says Hynek's written on there in ink, and then somebody in red ink has wrote page numbers down. And if you open it up, there's tons of things highlighted. Not sure of the significance of it. Not nowhere near had time to read it. But I'd really like to see what all the noting means for.
This is really cool. I was hesitant to ask you, but you have it here on your photo of the Craigslist thing, that he was asking $100 or best offer.
Yep.
That's a pretty good deal.
Yep, and I gave him what he was asking, just
figured out. Yeah, it's worth it.
Yeah, I didn't want to. I didn't try to lowball him.
Yeah.
And he took it. Now he wouldn't. The box it came in, it was some kind of basket. When I say a box, it was some kind of basket. He wouldn't give me that. He said his wife wanted to keep it. But the minute I left his house, and I screenshot that. Then I came home. I wanted to get a nice color picture of the screenshot on my computer. By the time I got home, he had pulled that ad quick, or I would have had that on there. But I'm working on putting a picture of the garage on there where I found it and all that. If I haven't already, I've got things like that, better display I'm working on. But they had some other books that they had, a lot of scientific military books in here, put out by the Air Force. Like I'm looking at one here called A Scientific Explanation for Flying Saucers by Donald Robey. A new theory on origins of comets. Lots of things on fireballs. It's funny how many UFO books they had. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with an author named Chris Lambright out of Texas.
Yeah.
He wrote a decent book. Me and him was exchanging information, and he was telling me of an article in a true story on flying saucers about Blue Book. And as he was telling me about it, I got to thinking, you know, there was magazines in one of them boxes too, and that was one of them, that particular article. And as I looked through that article, it's from it's volume number one of True Story on Flying Saucers. Just about every picture in it is in the box I have, the stuff I have here. So I believe this magazine came and looked through all this stuff, and that's where they put their book together back in the 60s, late 60s. But yeah, they had quite a bit of things in here, films and everything. And I've had everything transferred digitally. Malene, I've got a lot of them. You can't really tell what they are. There's no other information to go with them.
Now, the UFO video that you had in there, or it was, I guess it was film.
Yeah.
And you got that transferred.
Yes, I did. This is 1952, so the quality was terrible. And actually, you know, the Tremonton, that's the Officer Newhouse film from 52 out in Utah. You can go online and watch it. It's better online. I mean, better quality. Even the movie, the UFO movie from 56 with Albert Chop is, you can see it good in that movie also. But, yeah, this was it. And when I got it, I had hopes. When Newhouse was interviewed, the officer that had sent it to Air Force, when he got it back, he said 20 feet were missing off the film. Of course, you know, I was excited about that. I went out and, like I said, bought a projector also. This is a 16 millimeter here. Bought a projector. But you couldn't take your eye off the projector to watch the film to see if there was anything different because it would eat it up. I also had to have it. I had to take it to have it transferred. And it's just a very bad quality. I need to see about having somebody restore it.
Yeah.
To be able to tell if there's anything that may have been cut off on this one. You know, this one may have what he said was missing from the other one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm leaning towards no. I don't have a definite answer on that yet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ongoing research in this stuff.
Yeah. So looking at what you see there, I'm sure, you know, because Blue Book was similar to MUFON in that they took reports. So probably a lot of their reports were anecdotal. I mean, the videos and pictures, they must have explained away. Have you seen some pictures in there that make you second guess their conclusion?
Nothing. I haven't seen anything yet. I mean, there's a few things that they say were planets and stars. They're little dots. I mean, but there's no way to how you can tell. I don't know without more information on them. I have a lot of pictures with no cases that go with them.
Yeah.
They may have the case number written on them or the case, not a case number, but a case name. So I'm so busy with MUFON, I don't have enough time to put in a time I'd love to do on that.
Mm-hmm. So,
when I first got it, I started taking some celestials. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so the material is really exciting for those of us interested in the history of Blue Book, but I guess you probably, unfortunately, won't be able to find, like, a great anomalous case in there.
Not that I found yet. Like I said, I'm reaching out and getting people to help me look through things.
Yeah.
That's why Shepard, he's going to look at one for me. And maybe, you know, with help, we can discover some things like that. I've had different people in ufology contact me. I've talked to Jan Aldrich. He's seen my stuff and, you know, we've exchanged a little information. David Marler out in New Mexico. Ray, we talk about it. But a lot of people are kind of burnt out on Blue Book. But, I mean, from a historic aspect, I like it. I like looking at it.
Me too.
There was three books in that very first box I got. Like I say, they show every case from 47 on. They'll show the observer, location, date, and evaluation. I was telling the lieutenant about it, and he told me, he's like, you know, I probably shouldn't say this, but he said there may be cases in there that they didn't send on to Maxwell. Well, that, you know, the only thing you can really do is, it's not as easy as it sounds just to cross-reference on the internet. I mean, there's so much information out there. I've tried counting these cases to see if I come up with the 12,618. Years don't match what different books with statistics have in them. Sometimes they have more, sometimes they have less. I'd literally have to hire me a crew to evaluate all that. But I've been looking through them, trying to figure out if there's anything in there, and it's ongoing. Yeah, check back with me on that.
Yeah, no problem. It is hard because even this idea of the 701, which is made in a statement about, 701 unsolved cases, that number is in dispute because that number varies, as does the overall number of cases. In so many different places, there's so many different numbers that are thrown out, so it's hard to know.
Yeah, so I've just tried to focus on Ohio as far as statistics go like that. And I know we had 22 unknowns here in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Out of, I'm thinking the number was, I've got it written down somewhere, 1,100 and some case, odd cases that were in Ohio, 22 were unknown.
Mm-hmm.
1,124 cases. Out of 12,700 or 618.
Yeah.
They, just a second here, I'm looking at a paper.
But those are so fun. I mean, looking at the Blue Book unknown cases, a lot of them are terribly interesting. And although they are anecdotal, they're great because some of them involve scientists or police officers or other respected people in the community seeing some strange stuff.
Oh, yeah, and it's amazing how many were military. Mm-hmm. I've got some complete case files from White Sands back in the 50s.
Wow.
That are military. I mean, it's got notes from psychiatrists talking about the soldiers. Nothing, like I say, nothing's redacted on anything. So you mm-hmm. get a good chance of seeing all that. And I know that's what I try to do with these. If I see that somebody's into a particular case, I'll reach out to them
mm-hmm.
and share it with them, you know, and go from there to try to help me solve them a little bit.
Yeah.
It'd be nice, just some of the celestial sightings with today's technology as far as Stellarium and websites like that, just looking at the stars where they were located back then, just to see, you know, that's something you can do fairly quick. But a lot of times you have these case summaries and you're dealing with military time and they don't have exact location. It's hard to – I thought I'd just whip out a bunch of those and double-check celestial sightings. It's a lot tougher than it sounds.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
But the lieutenants told me when they was declassifying everything and throwing them out, all Navy sightings they had to throw out because you couldn't
really?
Couldn't give up locations.
Wow, interesting.
Of those sightings. So they just went to the trash, shredded up and went out. Now, a lot of these,
wow.
And I've wondered in these books, there's a lot of military sightings that are just coordinates, you know, out on the water. So I don't know. I've started a big map on my wall with push pins, slowly trying to get all those in just to look for patterns,
mm-hmm.
you know, dates. It's something that time. To get done, but I'm trying to do my own little rudimentary investigations like that.
Yeah.
But I work full time and then some. I have a family, so you gotta do what you can do.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I'm gonna keep things changing things around on there, putting different things on there so people can see them. And I look forward to hopefully James can use some of it in his movie, at least some of the Socorro items.
Yeah, I'm sure he can. I mean, you have some really cool stuff and original stuff there from Socorro, and I'm not surprised he's got it in there because it's an important case. And that's an example of, you know, an important anomalous case that you can, you know, add to. But I'm sure you're going to run across a lot of really great cases. And if you do, you know, let me know if you have some stuff you think might make a good story. Because I'd love to post, you know, it's so fun to share these incredible unknown Blue Book cases out there.
All right. Well, if you think of any Blue Book cases that interest you,
okay.
doesn't mean I have something on it. Obviously, yeah. I don't have everything. They're hit and miss. Sometimes it's just a case summary, which is just the basic information on a card.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the whole book that's, you know, I've got some that are 50-page cases. You just don't know. But, yeah, reach out to me. And that's basically, I have no plans to get to sell them or do anything like that. I'm just kind of hanging on to them and sharing them with people.
Great. Yeah, I have some of my favorite cases, so I'm going to go look that up, and I will. But thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing all of this with us. People can all see a lot of what you're talking about at your website and these YouTube videos that you're putting together. So it's really exciting stuff. Good job on
right,
keeping an eye out and obtaining this stuff. And, you know, what's wonderful, what you're doing is, you know, providing this information and helping get through it and sharing it. I mean, that's really cool stuff.
All right. You're welcome.
Thank you so much to Rob Mercer for being on the show. Really interesting stuff. Hopefully we'll be able to bring you some more of his information and his files in other ways. So keep up with us at openminds.tv. We hope to help him share his information and this Blue Book stuff. And you know what? I really appreciate Rob. He's a true researcher. You know, he's done a great job. And he's so selfless. You know, he's not charging anybody for this information. He's just putting it out there. And, you know, like it happens so much in this field, you have to spend your own money. It's often thankless, but he's got like no qualms about going out there and doing what it takes at his own expense to share this information with the public. So Thank you so much to Rob for his great work and for sharing all of this information with us. If you want to see more, and you should go look at more, he's got some interesting stuff here, go to the Miami Valley UFO Society. You can Google that, or it's just MiamiValleyUFOSociety.com. So thanks again so much to Rob. And thank you to Shepard Johnson for letting us know about Rob. As you said, Shepard, it is a really fascinating stuff. So great stuff. Thank you so much. Also, thank you to Martin Willis of Podcast UFO for joining us for the news at the beginning of the show. Also, thank you to Caleb Hanks, who does the music for the beginning and the end of the show. You could go see his information at clerkchronicles.com, or you can actually go to the radio page for openminds.tv, and you'll be able to see a link. He posts all of his music for free. It's awesome stuff. So there's a number of people to thank. Thank Dark Matter Radio. They're the people who are going to have Art Bell. He's going to be coming back on the air doing a daily podcast in just like a week or so. So this is super exciting. But they've also been replaying our show. PSN Network replays our show, some others. So thank you very much. Dark Matter Radio, by the way, is the network that Martin is on. So it's great to be partners with them. And it's so exciting that Art Bell is going to be returning to the radio. So go look at Dark Matter Radio for that. You can also see we wrote a story about it if you want more information at openminds.tv. Also, we already have started asking people to come speak at the conference. So if you have some suggestions, email those to us. However, we've got this amazing long list of really cool people, and I'm so excited because we're going to be bringing you people that you, I'm sure you have not seen before. In fact, I've already got, one, two, three, four PhDs that have agreed to come speak at the conference. In fact, two of those are professors. Maybe three of them were professors. So we're going to have a bunch of people you probably haven't heard before that haven't spoken at the Congress before, at least in the last 5 or 6 years since we've been running it. And they are incredible stuff that we've got at the conference. So you can get the early bird special right now if you go online and register. So you want to register as early as you can so you can get the cheapest price, the best price. But we'll be posting some of those speakers in the next couple of weeks. So really exciting stuff. I'm so excited. This year's going to be awesome. A lot of people say, well, how can you top Bob Lazar? Well, Bob Lazar was great, but he's not always everybody's cup of tea. But I think we're going to be able to share some more information about Bob Lazar nobody's ever heard before at this conference, some new research, believe it or not, as well as just some really cool speakers. So this is going to be a great year, to me, just as exciting as last year. So I'm so excited about that, as you can tell. Don't forget to check out the UFO portal. So we have an on-demand video site where you can get the lectures from last year, from previous years, including Bob Lazar and George Knapp talking about Area 51 and everything. So check that out at openminds.tv, and check out our Open Minds UFO report. So a lot of the news stories that we talk about here, we do it in a video fashion, so you can see some of these videos and pictures that we've been referring to. What's really cool about this is we also interviewed MUFON Utah's state director, Erica Lukes, about these white orb UFOs, because they've been getting a lot of these UFOs out in Utah as well. So go check out our YouTube and check out this video and our interview with Erica. We'll have to have her on the podcast soon as well. But thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Adios, muchachos.